This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 181, sponsored by InStock Trades and Coast City Styles. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 181. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I am here with Ron Richards.
As always.
And Josh Flanagan.
Good morrow to you both, sirs.
Harumph.
Huzzah.
We are iFanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of comics, and one of us cries about having to make the Pick of the Week, but they do it. They write a review about on the website. We talk about it on this show. We talk about other books of the week. We talk about voicemails and emails, all kinds of fun things. And before we get to the show, we'd like to remind everyone that this is a review show for the books of the week. So we're going to talk about spoilers and things that happen. So if you haven't read your books yet, pause the show and come back later. You'll be more thankful. Harumph, Josh. Harumph.
Okay. Now, everybody hates a qualification.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
here we go.
Are you going to explain why the pick of the week isn't Thor?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Why isn't it Thor?
Why isn't it Thor?
Why do you hate Love?
Why isn't it Detective Comics? You jerk.
Why isn't it? I was wrong about that. My opinion was wrong. I had a really, really hard time picking comics this week because I got through them all, and
because your store sucks.
Because you lost your thumbs in a Thrasher accident.
Yeah, it was bleeding all over everything, so I missed the key points of things because it was covered in blood. You know, I got through everything, and I'd read a lot of books that were pretty good, a lot of 4-star books, but it was hard for me to pick out one that I didn't think. You know, that you can really crow about. You can be like, this was great, you know? And so I actually read some more books. I added some things on. I really thought about it for a while, and I decided I had to go with the what it made me feel quotient. And in that case, what I came up with was Invincible number 61, because at the end of it, I felt the happiest.
Did you feel funny inside?
A little bit.
Dirty?
No, not at all dirty. I got a good tingle, you know?
Guilty?
Sort of like when you look over the edge.
Ashamed?
You're going through something here, aren't you?
Did you have to take a shower afterwards?
No, I didn't. Right. I didn't. If you read the last issue of Invincible number 60, you will remember that that was the summer blockbuster in one issue. The whole big crossover, everything happens. And if you read it, you probably also know that it kind of didn't work. We talked about it last month, and I remember Tom Cater's just excoriated the thing on Around Comics.
Yeah, he tore it apart, yeah.
You know, I didn't feel that badly about it, but I thought it didn't work. But it was an experiment, and I kind of respect that. You know, like
it's laudable to try new things.
It certainly is. And you know, half a book is writing and half a book is art. And Ryan Ottley, I don't know if I can say he's getting better and better, but I love it more every time. And I even think like the last issue, even though it was kind of difficult to follow, I thought he did a really good job. You know, trying to put in as much as he could. I can literally imagine how his hand hurt afterwards. And the book hasn't been late, so he did all that. You know, sort of on time. This issue, number 61, titled The Aftermath of the Invincible War, where basically the deal was a lot of Invincibles came clones from other worlds and just wrecked house on everything. And you kind of just didn't know what had happened. So this is him dealing with the fallout of what had happened afterwards. And he's getting a guilty conscience. He's getting a Matt Murdock-ness about him where all of this stuff is happening and it's his fault. Not because he did something wrong, but just, you know, he put into action, you know, chains of events that caused a lot of bad things to happen.
And also the public perception is against him as well. Yeah.
Well, he's always had the problem that his father very publicly – you know, turned, you know, yeah, or revealed that he was. Yep. And so, you know, the world being fickle as it is, people don't know whether to trust him or not. So he's got that's the Spider-Man thing, you know, like nobody quite knows what side he's on. And so basically, you know, when everything goes down and goes bad, that's when a good writer knows, don't forget to bring back the horrible shit and turn it up even worse on him. And that's what happened, basically. The last three pages, I'm not going to say what it was, but it brings back a storyline that's been around, you know, sort of since the beginning of the book. And it's a great last three pages. Like, you literally
turn... Did he grow a mustache?
No, but there are mustaches involved, if that means it. But you literally turn the page, and then you see the power that Ryan Otley has to draw a page that makes you go, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a very simple page with a figure on it, and you just... I get riddled. It like takes your breath out. Like, oh shit, that's really bad. And then the very last page is this. It's a silent full page splash page with these two little figures that are just about to go into combat, and it's drawn so damn well. Just body, you know, sort of posturing and composition. And I remember, like, I got to the very end of the book, and I just thought, geez, that's a great ending to an issue. And what it did more than anything was get me excited for the next issue. And so while the rest of the book, it was a good issue. It was fine. I thought I was looking – I think Otley's layouts are really good. He's really good at telling the story that way and sort of getting his characters to act in this sort of mix of cartooniness and drama. But the end of it really sealed it for me. I like the overall direction of, you know, things have got to change. Things have got to happen. Not unlike, say, in another storytelling medium like The Office. Like, it was getting really stagnant. So on the recent episodes, they've split things up and they changed things around, and it really worked. This is him moving the world along and changing things up on it. And readers don't like that a lot. Readers go, oh, why do you have to change everything? But, you know, you have to do it because you keep having, you know, keep people surprised and keep them guessing what's going to happen and don't let anybody get too comfortable. And the one thing he's not let happen is to let Invincible get very comfortable. Just when you think everything's going to be okay, he's got the girl, he's got the brother, everything is going to be fine. You know, it's a continual ripping the rug out from underneath him. And that gets harder and harder as you go on. And so, you know, based on all that stuff, this was probably the most fun book that I – it was the most fun book that I read this week.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I go back
to –
I
knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I go back to your – I mean, and trust me, I can relate. I know how difficult this burden we put upon ourselves is. I mean, I thought it was like a 4. You know, I mean, it was a good follow-up to the last issue, and it definitely kicks this new story arc, you know, off, you know, really, really well. And you're right, Otley's art is amazing, but it was just like – and there's some great discussions. And, of course, there's the establishing shot of the Pentagon, and because everything was wrecked, it's a construction crews, and there's a forklift putting in a new sign that says parking in rear, which is just like the old one, which I love that fucking sign.
Even Bad Rock in it, I was like, that was really cool.
Yeah, no, yeah. And then there was a lot of other, you know, Image heroes in it and stuff like that. And, I mean, it was all right. You know, like, I mean, compared to, you know, there are some other books that probably jumped out to me that probably would have been a better pick of the week. But that's me, so
here's the thing. You know. I've rated this a 4 also.
Yeah.
I didn't have any 5s this week, and that's key.
We're all about the ratings now, the numbers. It was about the comics.
Oh, man, I could deal with a 0.5 now and then. Yeah. Anyway, but... And then after that, you just have to go on what you feel. And so, me, this is one of my favorites. So it made me feel the most. For you, it might have been a different book.
Yeah.
You know, you're an unfeeling robot. How do you feel things?
I know. And I sound even more like it than normal now. So I sound hollow and empty.
Oh, technology.
Yeah. I do like the direction Kirkman's taking the book in. I know some people were really, really harsh on the last issue, like you and Tom and some other folks I spoke to. But I did enjoy the event in one issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I definitely saw the flaws and saw the problems with it, but I like the changing it up and mixing it and giving it that, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, as these books, it's the sustainability of a comic that I'm finding interesting, is that it reminds me a lot of TV, TV shows. You know, everybody's living under this shadow of a guillotine waiting for their book to get canceled because sales suck or whatever it is, and the few books that do make it and that break away from the first 24 issues, you know, 50 issues, you know, as we, you know, here we're on 61 issues. It's like, all right, well, do the creators really know where they're going to take this book long term? And I can only imagine how difficult that is. And so,
game plan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, you game, but I imagine the game plan at issue, you know, we've talked to Kirkman, the game plan at issue 5 was different than what it ended up being, you know, like as the book goes, because things have to change and things, you know, and you just react and that sort of thing. So it just, it's good to see it mix up. I liked the costume change, you know, 10 issues ago or whenever it was. And now I like this, you know, kind of, you know, bringing back this storyline that is coming, you know, at the end of it, as well as the kind of putting Invincible out of, you know, society's good graces, I think is a good direction. And I look forward to him kind of, you know, the rebuilding stage.
Those last three pages, though, those are good pages.
Oh, yeah, they're great pages.
There's almost your winner right there. One of the books, the book probably that more people, I think it's got to be the top pick. The one that most people said would have been their pick of the week was Detective 853, which is the second part of the Neil Gaiman, Andy Kubert, Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader story, part 2 of 2.
Now, I probably should caveat that I didn't read part 1. And I'm not a Batman fan, but I saw everybody talking about it on Twitter and on the site and stuff like that. So I read it in the store, and like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you really needed to read part 1. This is not an issue you could jump onto.
It seemed like a whole lot of nonsense, that's for sure. And then it ended, really lamely.
It was a metaphysical look at the entire history of Batman, which was set up.
Oh,
in the
which
first
I got
issue.
That. I understood that. I don't know. You guys talk about it, then I'll jump in. I just wanted to caveat that I did read it though.
Now, well, this is important. I asked Connor. I said, Connor, would this have been your pick of the week?
I said no when you asked me, but I changed it today to yes, solely because of the art. I thought it was an artistic tour de force from Andy Kubert, and there's a reason why. I guess it was late because he mimicked so many different styles. It must have taken him forever.
I noticed that. Yeah, the art looked really good.
That's not wrong. I thought actually the art was stronger in the last one, which where I really loved it. But
in the first issue, you mean? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's some panels here that are Brian Bolland. There's some panels here that are Dick Sprang. There's some panels here that are straight out of Arkham Asylum. I mean, it must have taken him forever.
Yep, they did.
It did. 3 months or whatever it was. It was good. You know, I gave it the pick solely for the art. The story was good. I don't know. That's something I appreciate what they're doing, and I like the exploration of it. I like the last issue better than this one.
Mm-hmm. That's how I felt. It didn't really fulfill the promise of what I thought the first issue was, because in the end, I just thought that it got a little sappy and poetic.
Yeah.
Which I think to some people it goes a lot further than it does with me.
I don't know. I mean, as far as I could tell, I get that Batman's dead and there's a funeral and everybody in his life, villains and heroes and friends and loved ones, come to pay their respects and he watches it all. I get that kind of metaphysical idea. Then he talks to his mother. I get that, and whole kind of, you know, facing, you know, who he is and why he is and all that kind of stuff. I get all that. And then it was the moment that it spilled into the goodnight, Batcave.
Yeah.
Goodnight, big dinosaur. Goodnight, giant penny. And then he's born.
Yeah.
It was sort of similar to the way Barry Allen died in Crisis, where he became back to the beginning, which I didn't mind. I thought it was a nice poetic circle that they made.
Right, so now he's born again? Like, what happens in
846? Well, none of this is all out of continuity.
This has nothing to do with
anything. There's your problem.
This is a little story that's going to exist on its own.
Right.
And that's fine. That's
out of continuity story.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Battle of the Cowl number 1 next week.
I saw that. That was awesome.
But yeah, it's totally out of continuity story. That it was interesting. I really like the exploration. I really like the idea of this person existing in different pop forms, and every panel is a different kind of Batman, because he was a different kind of Batman, you know, throughout the years.
Did you take it to bed and say good night, Batman? Good night, Alfred. Good night, Robin. Did you?
I did not, but
it was just a little sentimental and hokey for me at the end, and I was like, you know.
All I gotta say is Neil Gaiman was just like, they're gonna pay me for this. All right.
But here's the thing, and I truly believe this is it. If Neil Gaiman hadn't written this. If somebody else had come along, you know, if you put Chuck Austin's name on this, people would have fucking lit fires.
That's true for anything.
Yeah.
Story.
Yeah. I know, but
every writer brings cachet and their fan base. Doesn't matter what.
And I think the people gave him a lot of credit on this one.
See, I have no allegiance to Neil Gaiman. I didn't think it was hopeful.
Sure. No, I don't love everything he does. I think that this one, he really went for sentimentality. He didn't really do any plotting or any.
Because there is no plot. That's the whole point. Just like totally continuity, it's not a story. It's a look back on Batman's 70-year history.
No, and I think – but that's why I liked the first one so much, because I thought it was inventive. It was all those different versions of the Batman story, and I was – it didn't – this didn't really tie into that, I guess. It didn't feel like it was a conclusion of that which had come in the first one. I don't even want to say it was bad. It wasn't bad. I gave this one 4 stars too, but it was, why didn't I love it? And I was like, I just didn't connect with it at the end. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that you know, Ron's right when he starts doing the Good Night Moon thing at the end. I was like, it's kind of funny in the first page, and I was like, Good Night Joker, really?
It went on, like, for 90 pages.
Like, that's the sum of their relationship is Good Night. Like, it's just, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's more to it than that. Yeah. As if none of those things matter, because it's all an endless repeating cycle anyway.
That's the point. It's a story. It's all one story.
Which is once again, that's what Gaiman does.
Yeah.
Gaiman does, hey, look, it's all a story, and God's Walk Among Earth. Those are the two things he does all the time.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons, like, I really liked Sandman, because it's the first time that I read him do that. I read him do that a lot since then.
Yeah.
And I spot that, I guess. And again, it's not bad. You're not wrong about Kubert. Kubert, you know, crushed it. Absolutely. But that's, I mean, that's why I didn't pick it.
Good night, Josh. Good night, Connor. Good
night, iFanboy.
Good night, iFanboy.
Viking number 1 from Image came out amongst a tidal wave of hype and
press and
which I must have been not privy to.
Yeah.
The art was really good.
Oh, the art. Nick Klein's art was fucking amazing. What I thought was great. Well, issue 1 came out, and it's printed in the old Golden Age oversized style. So it's not the standard kind of issue size, which I think is just – the cover was just striking and just jumped off the shelf. And it's really a unique – you know, it's like almost like something – reminded me of 8-Ball, actually, the size. But yeah, so we talked to Ivan Brandon, the writer in Seattle, and basically he posited this as a Viking crime book.
I was really looking forward to it, and I think that you're absolutely right. The art is really striking, but I do think it's the kind of striking that isn't going to be for like your everyday fanboy.
Right.
I mean, like, I was sitting there going, wow, that's really different. Great. But
yeah, no, but for the same reason why people were raving about Riley on Proof, I see, you know, it's the similar kind, yes, of, you know, like, I can't imagine, you know, the art and Proof not going for the standard kind of fanboy. This isn't for, I don't think this book is for the standard kind of superhero fanboy. It's a much different kind of book. Story wise, I admit I struggled. I
struggle a lot.
Yeah, and I think a part of that is because I don't know who anybody is.
Here's a problem, and I got confused 2 or 3 pages in because people were getting named, but it wasn't clear who was naming who and who the person was.
Right.
That was happening a lot. Then one of the other things that was happening is there was a really good job at differentiating who people were. Everybody did have a look, and people did not look alike, so that wasn't a problem. But there were a lot of characters right away, and it wasn't clear who I was supposed to pay attention to.
Right, and I don't exactly know.
Or who they were, or their relationships to each other were.
Exactly.
I thought the first scene really hurt the book badly because you were so confused coming out of that first scene about anything.
Yeah.
The setting, the time period, who the people were, what was going on at all.
Yeah.
By the time I got out of the first scene, I thought, wow, that was really great art. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I read it 3 or 4 times.
I thought the whole book like that.
Yeah.
I read it a bunch of times in like the first sequence, trying to sort out what had happened, and it did take me too long. I think it was one of those, the idea is to just jump into a scene and let people figure it out, but for the first issue of a book, that's difficult to do.
It can also work when you're dealing with a setting that's familiar to people. When it's really an alien setting to people, it's a lot harder to jump into. You can drop me in the middle of a, you know, crime scene in the middle of a modern day cop story, and I can figure out who's who and what's what. But here, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, you don't know who, what people's allegiances are. You don't know what their loyalties are. You don't know who, you know, who belongs to what. I don't know what the power structure is. You know, like, it's tough because I didn't dislike it. It's just I struggled with it, and hopefully issue 2 brings it together and that sort of thing. And it's meant to be written in a monthly format. So, I mean, that's what Ivan said. So, you know, or issue format. So I think it's foreign because it's a culture, it's a setting, it's a whole thing. People, like you said, we have no idea. So
it can be done in a less confusing way. I had no problem in the first issue of Northlanders.
Yeah.
You know, it was just – I think this particular style was not a good style for a first issue where you don't know.
Yeah.
I have no desire to pick the second issue up at this point. You know, I have to reread it to see if I do after that. But
right,
it was just a huge misstep to start that way.
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, my approach to this is to take it at, you know, based off the art and based off the design choices and stuff like that, to take the first arc, see it through, and then make judgment. That's my position on it.
I'm definitely interested in a second issue, and I'll tell you why. When I was a kid, my favorite movie was Excalibur, which, by the way,
with the freaky Merlin with the skull cap.
I should not have been watching that. That's what I learned, because
it
was on.
I watched it.
You shouldn't have been watching it either. It was on just this last week, and like, I realized when I was a kid I had no idea what the hell that was, but I thought it was cool as shit anyway.
Yeah. And I wish I could imitate how Merlin used to talk. Oh my god, he had like this cadence, this like weird, it was like that early 80s movie kind of, you know?
The whole movie sounded like it was done in ADR. And then the other weird thing is that the daughter, in the beginning, like the king is looking at, it's Gabriel Byrne actually, as Uther. He's looking at the rival king's wife and she's dancing all sexy, and then like he's like, I must have her, and she gets all naked. That was the director's daughter.
Oh, Jesus.
I was just like, ugh. Anyway, but it was like that. Like, I was like, I don't really know who these people are, but this is still kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I'll figure I'll sort it out. If I don't sort it out by the next issue, then I won't keep reading it. But if, you know.
Yeah.
New Avengers 52, another book that I considered briefly, I think. What'd you guys think of this one? You said you wanted more of them sitting around talking, and damn it, that's what you got.
I want to know why. What happened to Doctor Strange's mustache? When did it get so short?
Yeah, no, he quickly shaved before he went back to their
house. It bothered me. Like, you know, Doctor Strange has that awesome 70s style mustache that goes the Fu Manchu. That's part of his look. Well, and now he's just got, you know, normal man mustache. And it's just like, I can't take you seriously as Doctor Strange when you've got normal man mustache.
Can I tell you that this was maybe one of the first times that I read like a bunch of Bachalo pages and thought, he's good.
Yeah.
He's been good in this whole.
He has been
good. For a really long time, I didn't like Bachalo.
Oh, you didn't read the Spider-Man arcs he did.
No.
That's he was good in those.
Yeah, that's where he started doing these white borders. I mean, like, this is – if you like this, then you should go back and pick up the Spider-Man arcs because, yeah. I mean, this it's like the same thing but with Spider-Man. It was really – yeah.
I mean, even like that part of the book, the stuff with Doctor Strange and Wiccan and the stuff with the Hood, I thought was great. I was like, this is really interesting. Like, they're taking this character, and I'm thinking to myself, is the Hood going to get exercised and then become, like, a good guy?
We'll find out. I think it all is very interesting. I like it. I like Doctor Strange. Yeah. I like this whole aspect to it. And
the whole dialogue around the table was still hysterical. Was still, you know, like,
yeah, but
they're looking at the Eye of Imago. It holds up the cape, right? He goes, no, Princess, that's funny. Like, that was like, it was just funny to see Doctor Strange, like, get in the mix of it. You know?
It's true, but I'll be honest, it's starting to drag.
Yeah. Well, now they're moving.
Three issues at the table, and like get on. And you know what? I don't like Billy Tan's style. I said this last time, but like, but still, his ability to keep that clear. And I was really paying attention to like all the characters he had to put in each shot and how he was lining the shots and things like that. And I was like, well, he's doing a good juggling job here, basically. And then the Son of Satan shows up, and I don't really care.
You will.
Maybe.
So Josh, talk about Thor 601.
Thor 601. And this is when we lose listeners, I think.
You have a long history of Thor. You love Thor. Thor's one of your favorite guys. You've got a Thor piece of art on your wall.
Simonson.
You're a big fan of the Thor books. You're not a big fan of J. Michael Straczynski, so you read the first trade. You didn't really love it. You haven't read Thor since. Everyone hates you. Go.
Yeah. I put an article up at some point on the site because Will had Six Gun on the site had sent me the first six issue collection of the new Thor series and said, I think you'll really like this, give it a shot. And I did, and it was okay. I mean, that's what I would give to it. Like, I wasn't terribly excited about it. I mean, he's chosen like the setup's okay, but it was just sort of flatlining to me, I thought. And I read a thing here or there in the middle that wasn't so bad. I read that issue where Cap came back, and I really didn't like that very much. And then when I was in the midst of trying to pick a book and I couldn't, I was like, well, let me read Thor. So I read 601. I figured that's probably going to be a fairly easy place to jump on because, you know, 601. And it annoyed the shit out of me right from the beginning. And I think it's not a question of plotting or anything like that. It was a question of tone. I'll tell you exactly what really knocked me right off. From the very beginning, Donald Blake exists in sort of the ether realm, like the other side of Thor, or vice versa, depending on how they are, which is always kind of something I liked. Although, I don't know, Blake, I feel like he drags the character Thor down. I want Thor to exist on his own a little and like have to be the god among men and deal with that. But like the discussion where like Blake is referencing movies and stuff like that, it just, I don't know, it just feels wrong for Thor. And I thought that there was a lot of that in this issue where there was all these pop culture touchstones, which are contradictory to what I always liked about Thor books. And that is the root of what I don't like. And then they had the Grim
Warriors 3.
Yeah, the Warriors 3, who I love. I think those are so much fun. And they showed him as, you know, Volstagg as a, you know, ridiculous drunk. And then he quoted directly, without reference, Val Kilmer from Tombstone, one of my favorite movies of all time. And he said, I've not yet begun to defile myself. And I just thought, that's fucking cheap. Like, it was really, like, lame. And if you didn't know what it was, you wouldn't notice it. But things like that. And then just be like being drunk and feeling sorry for themselves. I was like, it just didn't feel right. And then I got to Dr. Doom and I hated the way that Dr. Doom was being written. I didn't even notice the Wikipedia thing.
Yeah, I read this too because Josh read it. I said, you know, screw it. He threw the gauntlet down. I'll pick it up. And he lost me right in the first couple of scenes when Dr. Doom talks about having to look something up on Wikipedia. Mm. And that's when I went, all right, I'm out.
Yeah.
I mean, I finished the whole issue. Just like, I'm done with this. And the Warriors 3 stuff annoyed me. They were annoying. I don't know. It's weird.
The whole thing was funny because there was so much vitriol on the site about Thor, and people were calling for Josh's head that he didn't pick it as the pick of the week and all that stuff. I flipped through the issue. Like, and we talked about this before personally amongst the three of us, is like, personally for me, I just have no interest in Thor. Like, I don't even have, like, I appreciate the art from the Simonson arc back in the day and stuff like that, but I didn't read that back then, you know what I mean? Like, huh. And so I have no kind of affinity for it. I have no interest in it. And reading this just kind of cemented that for me. And I guess the whole thing is that, like, not everything is for everybody. I guess that's the moral of the story.
Here's the thing. I don't think this is bad.
The art looked beautiful, by the way.
No, the art, and it's actually, yeah. It's the cover guy. It's Jarko Mrkonjic.
Yeah, the art was good. The art was really good.
I love Coy Pial. I thought he was really good.
Coy Pial was really nice, yeah.
It's not for me. It's not what my idea of Thor, a Thor comic is supposed to be like. A lot of people like it, and you know, like everybody. So clearly, you know, I'm biased about this in some way. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I really like. It's so not my take.
But you have an image of Thor in your head because you read a lot of Thor comics as a kid in a certain style.
And I do, I do think Straczynski writes in a way where I think it. There's this like, feels to me like a conscious attempt to make everything really matter. Like if it was a Michael Bay movie, the music would be swelling a lot, and you'd be like, "Stop trying to make me feel like this is important."
Would the ground be wet?
It would be slightly wet.
Okay, and would the camera spin around Thor like three times?
Three pigeons would fly.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Thor himself should be this epic character all the time. And I see the idea behind grounding him, you know, like putting him in this small Midwestern town. It sounds like a good idea on paper, but it doesn't work for me. And really, I just thought a lot of the writing was cutesy in this like referential pop culture way that I think Straczynski is doing as a put on, because I don't remember him doing that kind of stuff a lot.
No, he did Spider-Man, and it works for Spider-Man because that's the character. It doesn't work for Thor.
It just doesn't work for and for me, like getting to Doom was the last where I was like, you're not gonna write Doom right? Come on.
His Doom wasn't good. He's the guy that wrote Doom that cried at 9/11.
Yeah, that's
he doesn't get Doom.
No. So that's why I didn't like it. Obviously, I mean I was reading the comments on it. People really loved it, and I don't get it, but you know.
I thought it was very average. I thought there was some stuff I liked, but most of the stuff I felt was kind of annoyed by. So,
and I want this to be, you know, I went in, I was like, I really hope I love this because I think it would be a lot of fun to make this my pick of the week. Like, I went in with an open mind. I really thought about it, but it just didn't do it for me.
That's okay. Not everything.
It is okay.
Not everything has to do it.
Yeah,
that's okay.
You know what else is okay? If you want T-shirts and your local store doesn't have any in your size, maybe you need something to wear to the Comic-Con, something like that. You want to dress up your geek cred, you can go to Coast City Styles. They will hook you up. They specialize in comic book T-shirts from DC, Marvel, and many of the movies and all the – they got all the new Rainbow Lantern Corps. Do they officially call them the Rainbow Corps?
I really hope not.
They should. But seriously, those are like the shirts.
I do have to admit, I wore my Red Lantern shirt to work the other day, and I walked in and somebody who knew about it is like, oh – like he like kind of left me alone.
should buy each of them and then dress according to
exactly
mood. Like if you wear the orange that day, like the one where you're going in for a raise or whatever, you should do that. So if you want to get some T-shirts and you're an iFanboy listener, as I assume you are, if you're listening to this, it would almost have to be so. You can get 10% off any purchase. Enter the coupon code iFanboy in the checkout field. It's coastcitystyles.com. It's for geeks, picked by geeks. So get over there, check out their merch.
Kick-Ass number 6 came out, and for $2.99, I don't see how you can get more bang for your buck.
This must have been your pick.
No, actually, it wasn't. It was really close, though, but this issue was really good.
It was really, really good.
And it was probably really good because it didn't center around Kick-Ass getting his ass kicked.
So we
kind of learn more about Big Daddy and Hit Girl, and we kind of get their origin, and we find out that, you know, Big Daddy is a Punisher-esque type guy whose wife was killed, and so he goes on this mission to, you know, avenge, you know, to do justice, but for some reason starts training his young daughter and allows them to dress up like superheroes to keep her interested in it, which I thought was a fascinating kind of angle to it. It had tinges of The Professional.
Yes.
And tinges of Tulip Story from Preacher.
Yeah, exactly. But what was great was that we got that whole kind of flashback of their origin, as well as, we, you know, it ties in them trying to recruit Kick-Ass and the Red Mist and kind of, you know, do a team up to and do their whole thing. And it ends with a great betrayal. And it, this was just like, I read it and I immediately read it again because it was so much fun. I liked it.
I would agree with that. All of that. Yes.
Awesome.
I read this one too because I hadn't been reading it. I jumped off. It was better than the ones that came before it. I got a little confused because I hadn't been reading it maybe, but the girl who had, because she had the wig, like there was a couple of storytelling things where I was like, wait, who am I looking at now?
Well, there luckily there aren't many young girls, so.
No, but they skipped time a couple of times in a weird place, and I kind of lost track of where I was, but good stuff. Yeah, you know, so it was good.
What was also good was Guardians of the Galaxy 13.
I Am Groot.
Oh, God. It was, for me, it was all about the page when they're planning, the tactics page. Oh, God, that was hysterical. So essentially, this ties in with the War Kings, and the Guardians of the Galaxy are back together. They're getting their shit together. Warlock has joined the team back, and they're aware of the war between the Kree and the Shi'ar, with the Inhumans leading the Kree. And basically, Adam Warlock saying, like, this is not only, you know, hurting the universe politically, but it's also threatening to rip the fabric of space. You know, that's when it gets a little kind of cosmic-y, and that's when I kind of roll my eyes, but you just roll with it. And there's a great 9-panel... page.
Right. I was just flipping through it. I found it. I was like, oh, that's the one you're talking about. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Oh, yeah. Of Rocket Raccoon and Star-Lord planning the attack. And it was just a great conversation. And Abnett and Lanning, this whole of War of Kings event is being totally orchestrated by Abnett and Lanning, and I'm on board for it all. It's just fantastic. You
know, there was some talk this week, sort of on a piece that I did, about whether you can do people talking.
Yep.
And this, to me, is a perfect example how you could do like a West Wing type scene.
Yeah.
The camera doesn't shift. It's all done in body language. Granted, one of them is a raccoon. But no, this was a totally fun issue. And to this day, like, how many are we in now? Number 13.
Yeah.
The first few pages that have the briefing.
Yep.
I love those pages.
Yep.
Where, like, each character gives their little take on what had happened sort of after the fact, the real world camera, I guess.
Yeah, like the debriefing type thing. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
It was a really fun issue. And Will Quintana, who's not been on it, I don't think up to now, he did a really good job.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff going on. Lots of characters.
Yeah, yeah.
So why wasn't that your pick? You sound like you liked that one.
I did. I really did.
No, not you.
It was fun. Oh. It was fun. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't earth shattering.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't, they set out a plan and it didn't go as planned. And of course, you know, it's kind of, I feel like it's prelude to what's coming.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
That's actually why, because it was just like, it was getting from one place to another kind of issue. It wasn't really that anything had happened. He has to justify everything.
Yes, you do. Ghost Rider 34, this is Jason Aaron's. He's getting in near the end of his run on Ghost Rider, and he's got Tony Moore on art right now, and it is just magnificent. This whole ride from Jason Aaron on Ghost Rider has been a very grindhousey, B-movie-ish type of over-the-top, kind of a thing you'd see at 3 in the morning on, you know, television. The first arc was great. The middle arc's been varying degrees of good. And this has been returned to the first arc quality, and a lot of it has to do with Tony Moore on art, but it's really just, this was a one shot of Ghost Rider fighting a demon trucker who goes around killing other truckers and feeding their souls to a demon, and just a lot of trucker stuff and demons on fire and Ghost Rider burning people and hooks and decapitations. And
Tony Moore is just fantastic.
Yeah, and he makes it so much better.
Yeah.
And he's just amazing. And this, it's only been two issues he's been on, but this is a one-shot you can totally pick up and just enjoy as a story because it doesn't tie in, really.
Yeah.
There's some oblique references, but for the most part, it's just him versus a demon, and it's great. He's a big trucker demon.
I don't know how I missed. Like, I got off, and then I forgot to get back on, and this just sounds fantastic. So
you can get 34 and 33. It was a big recap of everything that's happened, and you can totally read that, too, and that was some great Tony Moore stuff. But the book that was briefly my pick of the week when Josh and I talked yesterday was Scalped, 28. And this is, I thought, one of the better Scalps in a long time. This was the issue where we find out the truth behind the big murder mystery that's been hanging over the entire story since the first issue, which was the murder of the FBI agents in 1975, I believe, which involves all the major older characters. And we finally find out the truth about that, who really did the murders and who killed Dashiell's mother. And it's all, it was sort of the point in the murder story where you get the reveal. And it's all very exciting. And now what's going to happen at the last 10 minutes of the movie? And so that's, for me, it was very exciting to finally get the pieces put in place. Mm-hmm. And it's just full of great Jason Aaron dialogue, great Jason Aaron characterization, some prison stuff that was really strong. And he just does the stuff really well. And this was that moment in the story where you finally get the answers, which was nice.
Yeah, it was a good issue. I think I lost a little, just I got some people mixed up. Like I was trying to remember who Catcher
was. You were confused this week.
You had a rough week, didn't you?
to be fair, on Wednesday, I did have the flu.
So. What's going on? Where am I? Who are you?
Where's the lady who brings my pills?
Dynamo 5, number 21, just cements the fact that if you want modern superhero team book, Dynamo 5 is the book you got to be reading. This book is just so good, and this issue was just so innocently good. And it's almost like, you know, now that Noble Causes is finished, I kind of come to the conclusion that Jay Ferber learned from Noble Causes and is applying all that to this book. And it's just so much fun to read. This issue had a couple of different storylines going in it. Visionary, one of the guy with the face, shoots the face beams, takes out the young Firebird out on a date. And at the same time, Scrap, the kind of gothy kind of strength one, goes out on a date with a guy that she met on, you know, internet dating site. So it's got that kind of reminded me of like old kind of X-Men, you know, when they would go out on dates with people and try to have lives. Meanwhile, keeping the main kind of larger plot lines moving. Great twist with the guy that Scrap goes out with. Turns out he's a reporter, and at the end of their date, she's like, "So what do you work on?" He's like, "Oh, I'm doing an expose on Dynamo 5. I'm going to find out who they are and what makes them tick." And it was like, and yes, it's the kind of Superman-y kind of, you know, like, you know, a nosy reporter type, you know, type thing, but it just works. It works on a modern level that is just like so. It's every beat that is hit well, and it's just so quality. So I love this book.
Again. I'm looking forward to the third trade very much so.
Yeah. And admittedly, I think I'm be curious to what you think of it, because I think that the third trade kind of dragged a little in some places, but the past two issues have just been like, okay, yeah, like I'm so much faith in this book. It's so good.
But you read them over the course of 6-7 months, yeah, whereas exactly. I'll read them in the afternoon, so it probably won't be so bad. Yeah, I guess.
But you'll be confused.
Yes, so. You won't know who anybody is. Who's this guy?
Seriously, where am I?
So if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see all the books that came out this week. And there are a bunch of other ones that came out. We want to highlight some of the user reviews by the folks who frequent ifanboy.com and get their take on some of the other books that came out. And our first review comes from El Capitan Corti, who reviewed Supergirl number 40 and gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And at the time of this recording, 0.02% of the community made that their pick of the week. And El Capitan Cordy says, "The fact that Gates has been heavily involved in the ongoing New Krypton saga, which is running through all the titles in the Superman family, has certainly helped alleviate the directionless quality that formerly plagued the title. And regardless of direction, Gates has been doing a bang-up job of mixing action and words, much better than I've come to expect from people just breaking into the industry." So a little praise for the writing there, even though he gave the story a 3 out of 5.
I think he's like basically the point being that, you know, the book has been sort of directionless since its relaunch. And he said that Gates is doing as admirable a job as anybody, plus the fact that he's still pretty new at it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, again, I've heard nothing but good things about Supergirl. I mean, it's if you like that kind of thing, it's supposed to be good.
That's very awesome praise from Ron Richards.
Next up.
Put that in the back of a book.
Yeah, if you like this sort of thing, yeah, it's for you.
I've read all your work. That's what Ron said to a creator when he met him and he didn't like the work that he'd done. "Hey, I've read all your work." Anyway, Joe Com reviewed Skrull Kill Crew number 1. He gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5. So not so great. I had some hope from the mini story in the Dark Reign New Nation. He thinks that was the name, and I think he might be right, because that was pretty good. But this one just felt meh. Now, maybe I set my expectations too high. I was hoping to see Ryder be like the new Iron Fist or War Machine, but I can see it will likely be Mike Moon Knight, great at first, and then some HBO writer takes them down. And the reason that I wanted to highlight this, and I actually read this, is because this was written by Adam Felber, who I know from NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And he's also a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. And this is off the back of Grant Morrison and Mark Miller, I think.
Yeah, the Skull Kill Crew was a Morrison-Miller, hey, they're letting us play in the mid-90s with Skrulls. And it's like supposed to be epically fantastic and wonderful and somewhat of a sacred cow. So I was kind of sad to see them bring it back for this. Although I don't believe these are different characters. Right.
The thing is, here's the problem with it. I didn't ever read that. And this was a first issue. And either he doesn't know who these characters are, or he's assuming that everybody does.
Right.
And so it sort of starts right in the middle of everything. And I pretty much followed. You know, as a sort of page-to-page exercise in comic book writing, I thought it wasn't bad. It was, you know, dynamically well. The pages were constructed well. I was actually sort of surprised since the guy's not a comic book writer. And it was kind of funny, but it didn't do enough setup. Like, you know, when you read Flash Rebirth and the first, you know, 8 pages told you exactly where you were, even if you had no idea, it didn't do that. So it was very much like, well, what am I looking at? What's going on?
You could say that you were perhaps a bit confused.
And it just didn't excite me.
No. If there was a book that excited you, go to ifanboy.com.
Get off my lawn.
Go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can write a review and you can rate your books. Tell everybody what you think. Be heard on ifanboy.com/comics.
On to the email. First up, and this is not confusing at all, I just like to say, is Ben G. And he said, did any of you read the Annihilation event? I've just picked up the
event.
Did any of you read the Annihilation event? I just picked up the first few copies of The Prelude, Thanos 7 through 11, and it seems interesting so far, but is it worth pursuing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Annihilation was fantastic, was so much fun. It was originally plotted and planned out by Keith Giffen, who's a legend in the industry, and if anything, it shows you the emergence of Abnett and Lanning as my new master.
This is where all this stuff that we're talking about now, this is where that all started.
Yeah.
I've only read the first volume of it. The trades are really expensive for whatever reason. But it was great. And the first half of the first trade is by Keith Giffen. I didn't like it as much. It's really well plotted, but like the dialogue is kind of iffy. The art's really, really good. And then the next part is Abnett and Lanning sort of grabbing Nova for the first time and just killing it right away. Like right away, it's as good as it is now.
Yep.
So I imagine it can only get better.
It's all those years in 2000 AD, man. It's paying off.
Indeed.
I suppose. But yeah, no, read Annihilation. There's no reason not to read it. If you like science fiction, if you like, I mean, like it completely don't need to know anything. Just pick it up, go with it, and it's fun.
Kendall from Texas writes and says, yo, yo, yo. I've been reading comics for about a year, and I've been reading and thoroughly enjoying a lot of more serious and dark stuff, i.e. Final Crisis, Batman RIP, Battlefield, Scalped, etc. However, I think I really need something fun to read, or I may become depressed. What do you recommend? I'd rather not read anything too cartoony or childish.
Tiny Titans. Oh, wait, no. Sorry.
Comics are not supposed to be fun.
I was confused.
They're supposed to be mean. What's fun?
Dynamo 5?
Devil.
Yeah, Dynamo 5 is fun. What were you saying, Josh?
That was a joke. I said Daredevil.
Oh, no. Daredevil's
it's not.
So fun.
Dynamo
5 is fun. We say Invincible's fun. It is.
Go back. It is.
Kick-Ass is fun. Go read Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass is fun. I mean, even when you want to talk about those Ghost Rider books. I mean, they're definitely not for kids. I think Fear Agent is a ton of fun. That's probably my favorite fun book. It's just space adventure. Like, he's kind of sad in it, but it's not. It's kind of cartoony.
It's not too heavy. It's not too dark, yeah.
Not cartoony in a childish way, but sort of wacky action movie way.
Yeah. Yay, fun.
Amazing Spider-Man? That's
Spider-Man.
Fun, isn't it?
Spider-Man is fun.
Amazing Spider-Man, yeah. Amazing Spider-Man's really fun.
Yep.
And there's definitely fun books out there. There totally is.
JSA was fun. Even though Magog, all the thing with Gog and everything was pretty heavy, but that was fun. Like, that was, like, I had fun reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah, fun.
Not Walking Dead.
No.
that's the antithesis of fun.
So if you have any questions for us, shoot us an email, contact@ifanboy.com. We love to hear from you. We love to answer your questions. And if you need to go buy a fun comic book and you want to pick up something fun to read, you should head over to InStock Trades. InStockTrades.com is one of the best places to buy trade paperbacks online. You can save up to 37% off titles. They've got free shipping on orders over $50, so that's kind of inclines you to order more. You can order over 5,400 trade paperbacks. They're in stock and ready to order. They've got the new releases every Wednesday. When you make an order, it usually ships within 48 hours, and they pack it all neatly and nicely. So go to InStockTrades.com. They will take care of you there. All right, on to the voicemail. Our first voicemail comes from our buddy Jeff from Texas, talking about art.
It's Jeff from Texas. I have a question about original art. I never get a chance to go to, like, big cons, and I would love to own a piece of original Mark Bagley art. But I don't know where I could get my hands on that aside from, like, eBay. You know, are there like, websites? Does he have a website? Do most artists have a website where they can look for that kind of thing? Because I looked on Wikipedia and I didn't see a Bagley website. But I was wondering if there was, like, a place where a lot of artists, like, posted, you know, pieces that they've done and you can order them. So, yeah, thanks a lot, Jack. Bye.
Okay, we're going to assume that Jeff doesn't have Google.
Well, because he has Wikipedia. I would.
yeah.
Google's blocked. We're going to assume Google's blocked.
If you go to Google and just type Mark Bagley original art, the first hit is theartistchoice.com/bagleyan.htm, which is a place where you can buy all of Mark Bagley's original artwork.
So that's theartistchoice.com. They have stuff from all throughout his career.
And actually, the artist choice is that's the guy in Norwalk, the guy where I used to live.
Oh, right.
I never actually met him. He shopped at my store, and I never ran into him in 7 years or 8 years I was there.
The way that it kind of works is an artist a lot of times now will find a dealer that he works with, and that guy will sort of exclusively – I say guy because there are no women involved with this at all. No, that guy will exclusively represent that artist and sell their pages. So the good news of it is that you will find – you know, everything that's available from a specific artist is usually in that one place. They used to – a lot of guys used to sell it on their own, like through eBay, but I think that's not done as much.
So you've got the original dealers like Splash Page Art and the site that Bagley stuff is on, theartistchoice.com. But then there are also big dealers like Albert Moy and some of those other ones who they're buying pages and reselling them from those dealers and things like that. So really all you got to do is go to Google, type in a creator, an artist's name and original art, and you're most likely going to find something. Yeah.
Here's a tip. If you want a Lanille Francis, you don't buy now. It's top of the market.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the other thing.
wait 3 or 4 years, you'll be okay. You know what I was reading a really old comic book from the late 90s, and I found an ad for Preacher, Steve Dillon pages, and not a one of them was over $65.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. No. Well,
even 3 years ago, art was relatively cheap, and in the last 3 years, the market has really exploded, and it's all really expensive now.
Yeah, it's painful.
Looked at a lot of Michael Lark pages and thought, maybe.
Yeah.
I almost pulled the trigger on a double page spread Cliff Chang JLA page from the hospital scene from when Connor was in the hospital, and it was relatively reasonably priced, but they didn't do like credit card orders.
Oh,
so I backed out of it. But I kind of wish I hadn't, because it would have been awesome.
Another good site to check out is CadenceComicArt.com. They've got a lot of kind of up and comers. I know Mike Norton's art is there, but there's a whole bunch of other people, Scotty Young's art, and some of those other folks who, you know, Jamal Igle, you know, that more people are checking out. And so, you know, that's the thing. It's like, I remember a couple of years ago weren't we looking at, oh, who was it? Oh, Michael Lark art. And it was just so cheap. Now it's like through the roof. I mean, you definitely want to try to buy early as opposed to later.
The thing was, nobody bought Gotham Central, but a lot of people bought Captain America and Daredevil. Right,
exactly. All right. Our next voicemail is also economically minded.
This is Dave calling you. It's about 7 o'clock in Denver. Looking at my copy of the New York Times, which I still buy for $1.50. Okay, so people complain about how much this thing is, but I'm thinking there's way more paper and way more pages than the comics that I'm buying for $4 now. I'm thinking, would you guys spend $1 to get comics for in this format, kind of cheap, ratty paper, without all the gloss and covers and stuff? Do you think they could sell enough to make a profit in this format? I don't know. If so, get started on changing the industry for me. Thanks.
Well, we're not at all privy to the business side of the company, so we can't really say whether or not they could do that or whether or not it would lower prices, because there's so many other things involved in the pricing of a comic. There's all kinds of overhead that's not involved with newspapers. There's a different business.
Yeah.
But the idea of would fans buy it, I think some would, but I don't think most would, because I think the production is so high and it's been so high for so long that I wouldn't want a crappy looking comic, because the art is so important.
Imagine like taking your HDTV away and going back.
Yeah.
It'd be really hard. And I know that that's like such a first world problem, you know, but I haven't gone back and bought a lot of black and white showcases or anything, you know, and those are done sort of on crappy newsprint.
Well, I think it's different. I mean, I buy the old reprints of the Golden Age stuff because the art was crappy to begin with on crappy production. I'm talking about the art done now. It's different.
No, and absolutely. And that's the thing. And we, you know, like think about when, you know, the Ultimates came out and everybody's like, oh, the art production's terrible. You know, we've gotten really used to that. And going, you know, reading older comics now, even stuff that was printed in the 80s, like the, you know, the colors bleeding off of the side and stuff is smudged and the pages get dark and it, you know, it's not as good and it doesn't do justice to the work that the guys are doing. Yeah. I don't think.
And plus, like Connor said, just the economics of the paper industry and publishing are just it's such a nightmare in terms of paper prices and all that kind of stuff. So who knows, you know?
The pricing is what it is, and it's not going back. They're not rolling it back. It's not going to happen. Everybody you talk to in the industry says they've been holding the line for years, and they finally had to do it. It's not like they're doing it to bilk you out of more money. They're doing it to survive. Yeah. Like everybody else in this economy. It's not going to change. And you can either buy less books or you can pay the extra dollar or
yeah.
or you need to pay the extra dollar and complain, which is what everyone seems to be choosing to do.
So if you want
to every week.
If you want to complain some more, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Complain away. We are your ear to complain
sounding
to.
Board.
You're your sounding
every
board.
Monday. Every Monday. $3.99.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been doing that for
yeah.
not a surprise.
All right.
You can check that out at ifanboy.com. You can read Josh, Ron, Josh. Some sort of strange contract between the two of you.
The confusion is spreading.
it is getting hot. It is in the 80s.
It's getting hot in here right now.
So
that's the first
ready,
2009.
The first reference. It only gets worse as we get towards July. Check out ifanboy.com for Josh's Pick of the Week review. You can read more in-depth comic book discussion there, our daily columnists, all of our fun stuff, our new features, all the fun things happening at ifanboy.com. You can go to ifanboy.com/about to see our social blah, blah, blah. I collapsed.
You verbally spun out.
Yep. And you can see all of our social networking links there. You can be our friends at all kinds of different locations. And you can go to ifanboy.com/store and ifanboy.com/Amazon to help out.
And before we move on the social network type thing, go to Facebook, search for iFanboy, become a fan of the iFanboy page. It's there for you. It's a good resource. It's a good place to be, a good place to collaborate and talk to other iFanboy fans. So check us out on Facebook, too, if you get a chance.
And you can support iFanboy by becoming an iFanboy member. This is the program that we've set up to help keep the lights on, sort of literally. Not even figuratively. This is how we keep all of this stuff going these days, and we very much need your support. So if iFanboy is an important part of your comic reading life and your comic reading life is an important part of your life, think about giving the cost of one comic book a month. One crappy comic book a month will oh God, I sound like Sally Struthers. you can join at $4 a month or $42 a year, which saves you a little bit. And that gives you an iFanboy prize pack, which is a random comic book, some stickers, and some buttons. Or $10 a month, that's the platinum level, as we don't call it. Or $100 a year, if you pay all at once, we'll get you a prize pack that will include that stuff and a free members edition, special edition members t-shirt. And you can also check out the new iFanboy limited edition shirt, the power responsibility quotient graph that has nothing to do with any superhero characters you may or may not know that are arachnid based. Are those still available for pre-order
they're available for pre-order. They're in the process of being printed right now, and the people who have done the pre-orders will be getting them in the next few weeks. But yeah, we've got stock, so get them while you can before we're doing a limited print run of 250 again. So don't miss out. There, you know, some folks missed out on the Herm shirt, and we've asked you that if you're still interested in another print run of the Herm shirt, to email us at contact@ifanboy, subject line Herm, to let us know that you'd want it. If we get enough people to respond, maybe we'll do another print run of that. But in the meantime, you can't get it, so don't miss out on the power responsibility shirt.
Also, if you're still waiting for your iFanboy prize pack, basically about 2/3 of them have gone out, about 1/3 left to go. They are going to be going out this week, I'm pretty sure. So look for them in the next couple of weeks. Thank you very
much. A lot of them definitely are, because I've spent the last 4 hours packaging packages. So
so that's
definitely going out this week.
Yes. So thank you for your patience. That's coming out soon.
Cool. And if you want one of the iFanboy intern shirts, they are still available at revision3.com/store. They're on sale for $15.99, and there's literally only a couple left, so get it while you can.
Every Wednesday or late Tuesday, you can go to revision3.com/iFanboy or ifanboy.com to see our weekly video show, the half-hour to an hour extravaganza of comic book goodness. And this last week, we did Ron's Christmas Vault show, where we looked at two books Ron got us for Christmas and then one random book that Ron pulled off his shelf.
Because he didn't buy himself a present.
Exactly.
Right. And this next week, we are talking about Wolverine in commemoration with the Wolverine Origins film. We'll take a look at everyone's favorite character from Canada, who also has claws and says bub.
You can email contact@ifanboy.com and send us letters and things like that. Or you can leave a voicemail, like we said, at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326, not 32.
Yeah, spin out number two.
326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns? If you leave in a voicemail, you got to say your name. You got to tell us who you are, and you got to get to the point. Be blathering on and a half, for God's sakes. You know,
we get a lot of 5-minute voicemails.
Yeah,
I plan those. Come on, come on.
What did I call about? Right. Well, I don't agree with you. Anyway, so do that. Make sure that you communicate, you feedback with us. Obviously, we read stuff on the show. We put letters that, you know, they go up on the website. We like that content, so thank you.
Indeed, and we like you, and we hope that you like us. And if you do, go to iTunes and leave a review. Helps get the word out about iFanboy. It helps new listeners discover us and decide whether or not they should hit that subscribe button. And so go to iTunes. We've got over 400 reviews. We thank everybody who's left a review. We thank everybody who's left a review for our friends over at Around Comics and Tom vs. the Flash and Pipeline and Word Balloon and Comic Geek Speak and 11 O'Clock Comics, every other comics podcast, leave reviews. It's a good way to participate with all this whole podcasting community. And even more so, if you can get the word out by telling your friends or telling your comic book store or anybody else who you think might be into iFanboy to check us out, just write the URL on a Post-it and leave it on their desk and just walk away. Don't say anything. Let them discover it for themselves. We really appreciate it, and thank you to everybody for doing that up to today.
Is this a porn site?
It might be.
Yeah. Listen, without some more memberships, we may have to turn this into a porn site. You don't want that?
You don't want that.
Actually, people are going,
we might be able to do an iFanboy staff calendar. We almost have enough staff members.
Ooh, I'm rotund enough to make that work.
If you want an iFanboy staff calendar, send an email to josh@ifanboy.com with
subject line calendar. Yes. Subject line, I'd buy that for a dollar.
It'd be me eating like a big turkey leg slathered in gravy. For 12 months.
All right. Well, we're going to leave you with
just
that.
You. We've got staff members, you freak.
We're going to leave with
you egomaniac.
With that mental image of Josh eating a turkey leg naked. Until next
week.
Would
you be covered in gravy or not covered in gravy?
I never said naked. You plug that in yourself.
But that's the calendar. That's the whole point of the calendar. You see, the naked or scantily clad.
All calendars must have nudity.
You could be covered in gravy. Very thick gravy. You wouldn't be seeing anything.
That seems to me like a horrendous waste of gravy.
Until next week, I'm Ron.
Your wife might not agree, though. She might be into it.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm Connor.
And I don't think I'm going to do that to gravy. So there, I'm Josh, and I'm for gravy.
You respect gravy too much.
I do, especially when it's seasoned properly.
And on your belly.
Look how I rub it in. It makes my skin soft. Extorting money. Your parents. Your disgusting parents.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.